We're pleased to be joined on the line now by Jesse Noakes, Media Advisor for the Disrupt Burrup Hub Campaign Group. Thanks so much for joining us this morning, Jesse.
Always a pleasure to talk to Indy Media, Alex. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you, and I hope you're doing well, and I admire your resilience and courage and strength because you're going through a circumstance or set of circumstances that can't be easy for you at a personal level and must be quite stressful, so all power to you, Jesse.
Thank you. Yeah, it's certainly been a busy few months.
No doubt at all. And one aspect of that busyness and potential cause of stress is the court case you've been through, which came to a conclusion last Tuesday when you were fined $1,000 for failing to obey a data access order. Now, tell us about it's a long and winding story, isn't it? Tell us about the background to this, first of all, in terms of how this charge came about.
Yeah, sure. So it's actually, in fact, four data access orders that I was charged with failing to comply, and the $1,000 fine was across all four, so $250 a pop, which means that effectively I was fined $250 for not giving police access to my devices, my phones and my laptops that have been seized over the past several months. It kind of ensues from a number of protests the Disrupt Burrup Hub campaign have held over the course of this year. Doubtless your listeners would be aware of some of them, starting with the art gallery protest in January targeting the Frederick McCubbin colonial masterpiece with the Woodside logo sprayed on to protest the destruction of Aboriginal rock art on the Burrup Peninsula, of course, and culminating most recently with protests outside the home of the Woodside CEO and then subsequently the Woodside director and former WA treasurer, Ben Wyatt. Now, as media advisor for the Disrupt Burrup Hub campaign, I've been involved, obviously, in sort of doing the media for these campaigns, sending press releases, collating statements, making sure that the press get the stories both around the protests and also around the colossal police overreach that has kind of escalated throughout the year around that. More than a dozen raids of the homes of young campaigners, devices seized, laptops and phones confiscated, including my own. And so when police came knocking twice, once in May this year and then once again in August, demanding that I give them access to the phones and laptops they'd seized from me following some of these protests, I declined to do so on the basis that in my campaign work, both with Disrupt Burrup Hub, but also much more broadly in the climate, cultural heritage and First Nations justice space, and especially around a number of housing campaigns that I've run in recent years, I've been approached by hundreds, if not thousands, of people, many of them vulnerable First Nations families looking to share their stories with the public, seeking to drive political change oftentimes, as part of which I've had vast amounts of confidential material provided to me, documents, FOIs, applications, government non-disclosure agreements, photos, letters, correspondence, and most importantly, interviews, testimony, audio and video recordings from hundreds of families. And police, in seeking access to my devices, would have had access to all of this material, including much of it from people who've only shared it with me on the guarantee they'd remain anonymous due to, you know, very sensitive matters, some of them including criminal and child protection proceedings they're involved in. And so I said, no way to the cops, and that's what landed me in court last Monday and Tuesday.
I'll tell you what, if you made any such statements that I don't know the extent to which you had the opportunity to air such arguments in court, but you've made a very compelling case for journalistic freedom and the protection of sources in my mind there, Jesse. And what strikes me as extraordinary, actually, about the Disrupt Burrup Hub campaign generally is the way it has become a nexus point for a whole range of different social and political struggles and questions. So there's the question of police overreach and intimidation by Woodside Petroleum itself, the company that is behind the Burrup Hub gas projects. And there is also the question of journalistic freedom. We've seen in recent times with, for instance, the ABC Sydney Morning Herald's investigation of SAS war crimes in Afghanistan, intimidation and police raids there by the Australian Federal Police. Whistleblowers are, basically an endangered species in this country. There's any number of examples we could cite. So Just focusing for a moment on that question of journalistic freedom, Jesse, you've put a flag in the sand, so to speak, with your frankly very courageous stance. But the same cannot be said for the ABC. Can you tell us where that is up to? Because of course there was this Four Corners investigation, which covered the protests outside Woodside CEO Meg O'Neill's house, and there's been a lot of hullabaloo about that in the press and indeed in Parliament. Now, my understanding is that ABC's managing director David Anderson is willing to comply now with police orders to hand over footage. So where is that up to, and what would you say about the ABC's stance on that?
Yeah, I mean that's broadly my understanding too at this juncture. We've been involved in a back and forth with the ABC legal department and received a letter back from them most recently, late on Friday, which we haven't had a chance to respond to yet, obviously, it being Monday morning now. So I would firstly distinguish between Four Corners' behaviour and that of the ABC more broadly. The Four Corners episode and the conduct of their team in producing that episode, I think, was exemplary public interest journalism. I think the story that they had, as you say, kind of centering on the protest outside the home of the Woodside CEO, was the best and most effective illustration we've had yet of the way that power operates in Western Australia, to prop up powerful fossil fuel interests at the expense of future generations and young people alive today. And I think that undertakings that were given by Four Corners around material included in that show and the people they engage with to tell that story have been honoured in full. And so no qualms or queries there. The issue arises following the airing of that program, when WA Police issued Four Corners with an order to produce all the footage they had compiled for that program. And of course, people who agreed to be filmed for a Four Corners investigation did not agree to be filmed for a WA Police investigation. So when ABC management decided that they would comply with that order, and that decision was made some weeks ago now, in spite of repeated public guarantees by ABC Managing Director David Anderson that no confidential sources would be betrayed or surrendered by the ABC, I think it is a really troubling contradiction that on the one hand, assurances and undertakings have been given to multiple people, and on the other, everyone involved in producing this program did so on the assumption that, you know, that their footage and their stories might make it to air in an ABC special, but certainly never understood that WA Police would have access to conduct forensic investigations using every second of footage compiled as part of that program, much of which would have otherwise remained on the cutting room floor. And so, I mean, I think the ABC prima facie has the same obligation that I have to protect their sources. I think that's an ethical obligation. I think in some cases it extends to a legal obligation. And so it's definitely a troubling development. I'll note that this morning the West Australian newspaper features a four-page wraparound cover of launching a new advertising campaign from Woodside for their Scarborough gas project, which is part of Woodside's Burrup Hub development on the West Coast. So I think kind of, you know, while the captured state media in WA is effectively running free advertising, free propaganda for Woodside Energy, it's incumbent on the national media to stand firm, and especially the public broadcaster, having produced such an excellent investigative TV program some weeks ago. I think it's very disappointing that they've effectively been thrown under the bus by management, and that the ABC at a national level is you know, bending over backwards to comply with some pretty pathetic police state behaviour from Australian authorities.
Absolutely. And speaking of police state behaviour, and we had a story last week on incomplete, semi-complete, and in some cases dormant construction sites responsible by niche living. And I made the remark that really construction, mining and energy companies effectively run this state, and that's been the case for many decades. And without wishing to sound hyperbolic, I think it's probably fair to say, if you closely examine their actions over the course of a few months, that the WA police force or sections thereof have effectively been working as the strong arm of Woodside Petroleum. And, you know, it maybe sounds slightly facetious, but I'm not sure that it is, that they're almost acting in some ways as the private security force for Woodside, intimidating activists, raiding their homes. So I've personally heard some horror stories Jesse. So what are your comments on the role of the police here, who it seems to me are acting politically or acting, you could almost say, as I say, the strong arm of Woodside Petroleum?
Yeah, it's been remarked on widely, I think, by this point, that the escalating response from WA Police this year appears to be blatantly political. And, I mean, I made some comments in court when under cross-examination from the police prosecutor, who was pressing me fairly closely to my views on police and on the conduct of WA Police. And there were a number of officers from the State Security Investigations Group, WA's Counter-Terror Cops, sitting at the back of court during my trial on Monday last week. And, I mean, I don't cast any aspersions on any of those people individually. I think they're just doing their job, and you know they're often the sort of the janitors cleaning up mess other people leave behind. It's a pretty thankless task. So I mean, police, you know, at an individual level and on a case by case basis, do important work from time to time. But I do think that when they're kind of mobilised and deployed at a systemic level, in the interest of protecting power in this state, it's pretty unveiled, really. I mean, I think what Four Corners showed, where you had more than a dozen counter-terror cops armed bursting out of the home of the private residence of a fossil fuel CEO to take on one 19-year-old young woman with a spray can in her hand, it illustrates pretty clearly kind of whose side they're on. And I think ultimately it's, you know, WA Police are at the beck and call of the WA government, and the WA government appears to be at the beck and call of Woodside Energy. So I think it's kind of, it's one big cabal at this point.
I think that's a very good way of describing it, Jesse. Now, I said earlier that the Disrupt Burrup Hub campaign has become a nexus point for a number of different questions, you know, important social struggles. And in a funny sort of way, that the Burrup Hub gas project itself has lost some of the focus. So, and just briefly before we have to wrap up, Jesse, it's worth reiterating to our listenership what this campaign is all about. I'm not sure that a lot of listeners perhaps appreciate the scale of the gas project. $50 billion said to involve 6 billion tonnes of greenhouse gas emissions, which is the equivalent of Australia, of 12 years of Australia's emissions, 54 threatened species. So just give us a little bit of a thumbnail sketch, if you like, of just how important this campaign is in terms of stopping the actual gas project.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Burrup Hub's been around for decades in some form or other. It started with the Karratha gas plant on the Burrup Peninsula in WA, you know, the oldest, largest rock art site in the world, sacred to many traditional custodians up there. The Northwest Shelf project began in the 1980s, destroying thousands of rock art sites, crushing them up to create road base for that Karratha gas plant. It's since been joined by the Pluto gas processing plant, which is set to pipe in gas from the Scarborough offshore gas field, and subsequently the Browse Basin gas field, which is the largest untapped gas resource in Australia, if that comes online, and approvals are being sought through state and federal regulators as early as January next year by Woodside to lock that one in. That'll be a combined cumulative total of 6 billion tonnes of CO2 pumped out by 2070. It also involves feeding the Perdaman fertiliser plant and the existing Yarra fertiliser plant, again, destroying rock art sites in the creation of those projects. The ironic thing is that Woodside, as I say, have slapped their Scarborough gas project on the front page of the West this morning, paid advertising this time, unlike the unpaid advertising they've been running all year for it. The irony is they talk about Western Australian jobs and the connection Woodside have to the WA community. Almost none of this gas is actually remaining in WA. 85% of it goes straight offshore. Even of the 15% that is retained by the domestic gas reservation policy that the Carpenter government insisted on in decades gone by, the vast majority of that goes straight to this Perdaman fertiliser plant as part of Woodside's Burrup Hub. So in total, less than 4% of the gas from Scarborough is actually going to stay in WA to quote-unquote keep the lights on for our homes and hospitals and other critical infrastructure. So it's an absolute pup that we're being sold by Woodside and the WA government here. We're locking in emissions rising and continuing to rise in WA, which they've continued to do year on year with no abatement. And the trade-off is that we're not even getting anything out of it domestically ourselves to keep here in Western Australia. So I think all in all, the Burrup Hub is costing future generations big time, letting down, you know, our state, our country and the world for decades to come, and we've got almost nothing to show for it in terms of royalties, in terms of energy to power WA's future, and certainly in terms of, you know, priceless cultural heritage. It's all going up in smoke, and I think in weeks and months to come, with another shock and bushfire season in store, we will see even more of the cost of this coming home to roost.